Slate's Serial Spoiler Special is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Right now, get a free audiobook of your choice when you visit audible.com/spoiler. The following podcast contains explicit language.
Previously on the Serial Spoiler Special.
Let's talk about this question of anti-Muslim sentiment.
It was eye-opening to hear that that's the way people were talking about him.
Sarah framed the issue of anti-Muslim sentiment by starting out saying, David, you seem to be agreeing with me, maybe.
Well, I agree with you on one count, but totally disagree with you on another.
Episode 10 is where we're going to hear about $10,000 being demanded in cash by a lawyer.
You can't get everybody. Some people say no to the interview.
Jay, I was totally underwhelmed by the Nisha call.
You could totally misremember something if you add importance to it.
She's not sure, but like, she would not convict him.
These guys are so fucking wily.
Hi, I'm David Haglund, a senior editor at Slate, and welcome to the spoiler special podcast about Serial, the multi-part investigative series from This American Life. Every Thursday, we talk about the latest episode, and every Thursday, I'm joined by Slate staff writer Katie Waldman. And this week, she's here with me in New York. Hey, Katie.
Hey, David. Nice to see you.
Good to see you, too. And our guest this week is Wesley Morris, Pulitzer Prize-winning film critic for Grantland and co-host of his own podcast, Do You Like Prince Movies? Good to have you, Wesley.
Hi, y'all. What's going on?
A lot, actually. That's how I would put it. But let's get into it. We're talking about episode 11 of Serial this week. It was called Rumors. Later, we're going to talk with one of the musicians who composes some of the music you hear on Serial. And before we even talk about this episode, I want to hear again how it was set up last week.
Technically, Adnan is eligible for parole, but the chances of getting it are so slim for anyone with a life sentence for first-degree murder, but especially if you don't show remorse. Because, you know, what if he's a psychopath, right? Next time on Serial.
So that's how Sarah Koenig set up this week's episode. And she did, of course, get into this question of whether he's a psychopath or not. But to my mind, I'm breaking this up in my head into three different things that I hope we can talk about. The first of them, of those three things is what other people told her about Adnan. We heard from a bunch of different people. Then we did talk, you know, she spoke to an expert who has a lot of experience testing people who have been convicted of murder psychologically, and she talked about this question of psychopathy and whether Adnan has exhibited any signs of it and so on. And then third, we heard a lot more from Adnan himself and really got into his relationship to Sarah Koenig and to the show at this point. So I hope we can... talk about all three of those things. First, I just want to say this, for me, was the most intense listening experience of the show so far.
Really?
Yeah. Was it not like that for you guys?
I would say the Jay episode for me was the most intense one. Because there was a lot of expectation for what would come out of that. I think this was the most... The last two, the Gutierrez... the lawyer episode, and then Cynthia Gutierrez and the Adnan episode today. The sequence where he explains, he sort of gets angry at her.
Yeah, the letter, you mean, basically.
The letter, then, yeah. But then the phone call where she presents him with this rumor about stealing from the mosque.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, in so many ways, what we've been listening to for the last 11 episodes or 11 weeks has been... or 10 weeks, I guess, is this this guy's life. Two lives, you know, Haley's life and Adnan's life. And there's so much at stake for both what happened to her and what is going to happen to him. I have a great deal of empathy for his situation as an observed person of color. I have a great deal of sympathy for his human situation of being in a position that he swears he is innocent of. And then to have this woman digging around in your life with the possibility, not the promise, of exoneration. It's just, there's so much going on here, and he is handling it with so much tolerance.
I mean, he has a lot of grace when he's talking to her. And it was crazy when he had that sort of dam-breaking moment and he said, you're my executioner, you're my savior, right, I don't know which. Right. And it just sort of brought home how powerful she is. And it's not like she really asked for that power necessarily, but she wields it. And it is really eye-opening to hear from Adnan.
Well, that, I mean, to me, this podcast basically lays bare what journalists do when they are investigating a story with really high stakes where they don't know exactly what happened. You know, we are seeing in a way we don't usually see. It's obviously very carefully constructed and there's a lot of stuff that gets left out, and Koenig and the other producers choose what we're going to hear and what they're going to talk about. But we're still seeing the process much more plainly than you would in most magazine stories. And it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable. To me, it's not more uncomfortable than other stories if you stop and think about what's involved. But the process is being presented. Even to start at the beginning of this episode, when she talks to these various people who are coming to... This is unusual, right? They're coming to her after having heard a few episodes of Serial.
Right, right.
There are people from the mosque, and you know, a few of them don't want to be identified. And so we're hearing, you know, altered voices, and they're making these accusations against him, and she's weighing those accusations. Now, any journalist would have to do that, but normally they would have done that all before and then put down on paper their conclusions. And here she's kind of actually presenting some of that process for us. And that's what I mean by intense. I mean, for me, it was just so fraught hearing these accusations against him, some of which, you know, seemed, you know, either baseless or there was an obvious agenda at work, or we were soon going to learn that they were exaggerating something. One guy who says that, you know, Adnan stole from the mosque, at the very end of the clip we hear from him says, I did it too.
Yeah.
Which is so strange.
I also did this.
I mean, I actually felt like this episode was one of the first where I was really aware of the show presenting a red herring. And, like, to some extent, this is what happened with
she does
the
this,
setup.
Yeah, she does this a lot.
Yeah, but, like, the idea of psychopathy, it seems like she had ruled this out a while ago. Her conversations were not leading her to that conclusion, yet she dangled it in front of us at the end of last episode and basically framed this episode as, you know, is he or is he not a psychopath? And it just sort of the genuineness and the, again, that power differential that you were talking about before, juxtaposed with like my awareness of how contrived this psychopathy framing was, just was like really disturbing. And it's not, I don't want to fault Sarah for that. Like, I think it's a really interesting question, and it's something that was probably generated by a lot of the responses to Serial in real time, like people saying.
I disagree. Okay. I think this was always a question she was going to have to ask. Huh. I mean, I don't know. There's a This American Life episode called The Psychopath Test, and Koenig was working at This American Life at the time, and everyone on staff took the psychopath test. Mm-hmm. They all clearly learned a fair amount about
it. It's a really
good
episode.
It is really good. I re-listened to it this week, and it's worth listening to. She did obviously know something about this subject before, but I took this as a sincere investigation into, okay, what can I know? What should I feel comfortable, you know, concluding from these conversations that I'm having with this guy? Who else can I talk to give me some perspective on this?
Right.
So it's like I said, it's awkward to listen to, but partly because I think we're hearing that process in a way.
I think what Katie though was responding to is the convention of the form though, right? I mean, because what she did last week was kind of a DM, like dick move. Because, I mean, but the entire format of a Serial and of cliffhangers is all dick moves. It's all it's all about you being like, what?
Right. And
then
also,
we'll
we should get to the
week.
Mic drop at the end of this episode.
Right.
Like, holy crap. Okay, but
we'll get there.
I mean, I think that the framing, the psychopath framing, what I thought would happen, but I mean, I should know better because she actually is much more interested in the nuances of everything than those mic drops and the cliffhangers would imply that she would be in the next episode. Yeah. So what she's actually setting up in episode 10 is we're going to spend 2 hours talking about what a like whether or not Anand is really just out of his mind and whether he could have done this in a but it really obviously, you know, the Geraldo Rivera serial podcast would probably be all about that.
Right.
But I mean, I think you just don't know. And her whole agenda is to produce. All she's doing is what Gutierrez was trying to do, which is to plant a seed of reasonable doubt. It is not to exonerate him, although if that winds up being the outcome of what her reporting leads her to,
right.
Fine, great. But I think it is just to plant in us and hopefully in people with some power. I don't know what the legal options are, which she, I think those, that needs to come up at some point too.
I think she'll talk, I suspect that she'll talk about it next week. You know, there is, it's not exactly a new appeal, but there is an appeal that is going forward in a new way. And so I imagine next week, maybe we'll get an episode on the Innocence Project,
right.
and so on. But yeah, you're right, Wesley. I don't think that she went into this thinking, you know, I'm going to get to the bottom of it. I think she hoped she might, and she was going to do her darndest to try.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there was that expectation. What happens is in constructing a story, you raise expectations for a lot of listeners, like, oh, we're going to find out what really happened. And to me, it's been clear for quite a while now that we probably aren't.
Right.
Now it's totally clear. We almost
right.
certainly aren't.
Right.
And then, so what do you do with that? And in terms of the power of the journalist, what's one of the things that makes this story unusual is, as I think about this as someone who pitches stories and say, okay, if I went to my editor and said, I want to write about this case, I don't know what happened. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to figure out what happened. Most people have never heard of this case. Can I write it? And, you know, they might say no. This isn't about a larger subject, except insofar, I think, as it's sort of about the legal process more generally and how hard it is to know things. And as opposed to, say, a case where there was an obvious miscarriage of justice, there was a specific kind of miscarriage of justice, and you're going to write about that specific miscarriage. This is a different kind of story.
Right. When you say that there's nothing larger, do you mean that there's nothing... The question, I mean, because for me, I feel like there's so many things that are bigger than she is, and she wasn't aware of how big those things were until the public got the show.
So what, give me an example. I mean, I think
this question about the Muslim community,
yeah.
I don't know where she thought she was going to go with that before people began listening to the show. And it's like you guys talked about last week with who she thinks the listener of this show is. The truth is everybody's listening to the show. And everybody's got a stake in its outcome and its production and the way she talks about certain people and certain communities. And I think everybody has their guard up. Everybody is open to any possibility. I mean, not anybody, but I think a lot of us listening to this are open to whatever she presents us. And then, you know, we take it and process it ourselves. But we're doing, in some ways, a kind of detective work with her detective work, right?
Yeah.
And I think that all gives us a sort of secondhand ownership in this show. And I don't know if she was really prepared for how much ownership people are going to have with Serial, and how much of that ownership is going to be Muslim. It's going to be women. It's going to be people of color who are naturally and somewhat justifiably skeptical of this sort of white savior narrative that she is not directly creating for herself, but has waded into just by virtue of the racial dynamics of the case and her relationship to it.
Yeah. Although, can we say, I mean, what did you guys think of the portrayal of the Muslim community in this episode? Because I thought she actually did a pretty nice job saying, like, I'm from a small town.
Right.
I totally get this. This is not some weird alien remote thing. Like,
I think that she's been mischaracterized as being insensitive and mm-hmm. clueless, too. I think her cluelessness in many ways is a weapon at reporting.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? I think that she is fully aware of the privilege she has as a white woman wading into a case involving urban people of color. I think she knows all the power dynamics. What I don't think she was prepared for is the degree to which her audience is not the typical, what one would deem the typical This American Life listener. What that guy, Ali, when she talks to her about, when he mentions, you know, well, when NPR listeners hear this, they will assume XYZ. Yeah. I think there's a way in which she gets sort of narrow cast what the serial listener would be. I think the serial listener is everybody. I've talked to so many different people of so many different backgrounds, socioeconomic, racial, gender, like life experience, people who know people in prison, people who have been in prison. And I think that they're all listening to this show because I just don't think there's been anything like this where the airing out of the entire process has been made so accessibly plain. And also kind of dramatic and moral in other ways, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that, I mean, that brings to me the most intense moment in this episode is when we do hear from Adnan and when he writes this letter. There's apparently 18 single space pages. And I found it so illuminating to finally, you know, get some, you know, background, some context for the voice that we're hearing. Because mm-hmm. a lot of what we got was like, here's why, for instance, you know, I, meaning Adnan, have not pointed the finger at anyone, have not pointed to Jay, have not, you know, been impugning the various testimonies you're hearing in a specific way. Because he knows exactly the situation that he's in, because he knows the opportunity that this podcast provides, but also the dangers, also the risks involved. And so he's saying, mm-hmm. you know, look, this is a very complicated relationship. I know it's complicated. I can't show compassion for you because I don't want people to think that I'm trying to charm you
right.
or win
no, that
you over.
Really, yeah. I mean, I don't, you guys made me listen to this podcast in a way I don't normally do, which is like refreshing till it shows up.
Yeah.
I was so, like, I never listen to the show that way. But I did that. So I'm lying in bed this morning at 7:30. Or 7:37 or whatever, whenever it showed up. And that moment, I just sort of started crying because this is a person who, whether or not he did this, has exhibited nothing but, to Sarah, the most human, honest, candid aspect of himself that doesn't even seem like an aspect. It seems fully who he appears to be, which is why I think that raising this psychopathology question is important and ultimately inconclusive if what the expert she presents lays psychopathology out to be. We'll never know. He might not even know. He might know that he did it, but the way in which he can justify having done it if he indeed did do it is so far from his understanding of himself that it doesn't hold water to him.
Yeah, and he's in this impossible predicament too, where no matter how authentic he seems, like whatever he projects, like the more genuine he seems, the more fuel that could potentially be to an argument that he is intensely duplicitous and manipulative so expert at projecting this facade. And it's just, there's no... In some way, it almost makes me want to think about like our entire obsession with authenticity in culture now, and like Lena Dunham and stuff. And like you can keep peering behind facades and thinking like, oh, well, this is the one. Like once I say this thing or reveal this thing, like you will see the true me. But there's always someone in the corner saying, no, that could be just another projection.
No, it's like it's a classic there before the grace of God go I. Like,
yeah.
God forbid somebody dig around in my past. You know, they have no reason to because I haven't, you know, I haven't been accused of a crime this terrible. But somebody digs around in anybody's life, God knows the sort of rumorsness of this episode is also real. Like people just come out of the woodwork and are just like, yeah, Anand stole money, thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
You know, he stole my sweatpants. Clearly, this is some sort of non-exculpatory evidence. It actually is incriminating.
Right. So as I said at the top of the show, we're going to talk with Mark Phillips, who composes music for Serial. And we're also going to give you some recommendations for things to watch and read after the first season of Serial ends next week. But first, I want to tell you that this week's Serial Spoiler Special is brought to you by Audible. Audible is the internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment, information, and educational programming. And you can listen to content from Audible on basically any device, your smartphone, any portable device, your PC. If you can listen to me right now, you can listen to stuff from Audible. And right now, Audible is offering listeners of the Spoiler Special a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audible.com/spoiler, download a title free, and start listening. It's that easy. You can select any book as your free selection, but here's one that I'd recommend to fans of Serial, the true crime classic In Cold Blood by Truman Capote. It's about the 1959 murders of Herbert Clutter and his family on a Kansas farm. It's a classic. You may have seen the movie Capote, which I would recommend as supplemental material, along with a great piece on Slate by Ben Yagoda about the fact-checking involved in publishing that book. It first came out in The New Yorker in serialized fashion over four issues before it came out as a book. It's read by Scott Brick, and if you have listened to a lot of audiobooks, you may have heard his voice before. He's a veteran. And that's just one book for you to choose from. There are many, many more where that came from. Audible has more than 150,000 titles. So go to audible.com/spoiler. That's audible.com/spoiler. And get started today. So let's get back to the show. We're joined now by Mark Phillips, who's a composer for the show, and he also mixes the show. And Mark, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So the first thing we want to do, obviously, we are riveted by the story, riveted by, you know, this case and the stakes involved, but also this is a wonderfully produced podcast, and the music is a big part of that.
Oh, thanks.
And so we wanted to break it down a little. We asked you to pick a moment from the show, and I believe we have a moment from the episode we listened to just this morning. Let's hear it. So that was lovely, just the music by itself. And before I ask you, Mark, about it, I'm just curious from Katie and Wesley whether it recalled for you the moment in the episode that it was used. Any idea?
Nope. It sounded like emotional processing music, like tender, reflective. I feel feelings now, but I can't say exactly in the episode where it came in.
It sounded transitional, like maybe after one of Adnan's calls.
Well, okay. First of all, these are compliments because if you remember the music, then that means I didn't do my job and you were paying attention to the music and not the story. So like the whole thing with the score is like when people are like, oh, you guys don't use that much music. Like that's a compliment. So thank you. yeah, that was the last cue. So that was the section where, Sarah was talking about the letter that Anand wrote.
He writes in his letter that it's crazy-making. Quote, I'm always overthinking, analyzing what I say, how it sounds, and the fact that people always think I'm lying. All this thinking, it's to protect myself from being hurt, not from being accused of Hayes' murder, but for being accused of being manipulative or lying. And I know it's crazy, I know I'm paranoid, but I can never shake it, because no matter what I do or how careful I am, it always comes back.
And it was really a tough one because it's sort of the climax of the episode. I thought it was like a really just fascinating idea. You know, he can't be how he wants to be. And it's like a really complex emotion. And we tried a lot of different things. I wrote another piece that wasn't working because it felt too sad. We tried a lot of things. We were thinking about doing no music for a while. And we came up with this at like, you know, I think 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock last night. So it was like a last minute.
Last night, you were about to say.
Yeah. Julie Snyder, the executive producer, I mean, she's like, you know, a genius of editing and just production and storytelling. So, you know, I'm like sending stuff to her. I'm like, does that work? And she's like, not quite. And she's always just super spot on. And it's really just about like translating her, you know, what she's saying into like a cue and doing that.
So if the process ended, well, you finally found the music that was right for that moment at about 10 o'clock last night. When did that process start? When did you know, okay, this is a conversation that listeners are going to hear and I need to score it? I mean, when are you first getting
Well, okay. They send me the episode at some point on Tuesday, and we post it late Wednesday night. So they send the acts and tracks. So it's Sarah's like a rough assemblage of her narration and all the tape, all the archival tape. Yeah, I'm one of the few people who gets to listen to the show with no music. And I can tell you, it's like the podcast would be just as successful. And like, it's awesome. And I look forward to listening to it every week. And so I just have a moment where I listen to the show without anything. And I just, like, I try and listen to it as a listener, not like stopping and starting. So yeah, then I go through and come up with pieces, mix the show, send it to Julie, and then the revision process starts. And it's obviously needs to happen quickly because there's, you know, only a day to turn it around. But
right.
I mean, but like I said, it's already starting. I mean, the storytelling and the writing are so amazing that it doesn't, you could score it with, you know, stock, like whatever.
I mean, it would
be amazing.
I appreciate your modesty, although I mean, certainly it seems like the kind of thing one could screw up. I mean, there, you know, we've all seen movies and television shows where, you know, I think of Forrest Gump, for instance, had many other problems. But there are scores that just clash with you. And like you said, you I mean, it's interesting you say that you don't want us to think too consciously about the score, because then, you know, it's distracting us from the story rather than serving it, which is, itself a very kind of, it seems like a very modest or humble approach to the work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's also the other like major challenge, I think, is because the story is so, there's so much ambivalence in it. Like, if I write a piece of music that is too sad or too happy or whatever, it's kind of directing the listeners to think this person is lying or this person is wrongly accused. And so, yeah, the other major struggle, not just to take a backseat role and let the story be the story, but also to not put emotional content into how people perceive it and sort of guide them in one way or the other. And it's really hard because, you know, music is, it's like no matter what you do, it's like if it's slow, then it becomes sad. And, you know, if it's fast, then it becomes, you know, tension. And so, like, it's really hard to do that. And, you know, that's what I'm always struggling to do is not guide the listener in how they should be feeling.
Is the theme music yours as well?
No, the theme music's by Nick Thorburn.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we heard one piece on its own, but why don't you talk us through another piece of music that you've written for the show?
Okay. There's one that, just to have a name, I call Janitor. Yeah, that the first time we used it was the section on the man who discovered his body. And, you know, it was an interesting moment because, you know, if it had been super ominous, then I think it could have suggested that, you know, maybe this guy did it, you know, and I don't think that was the tone of the narrative. But it was that he's a weird guy, you know, he's a streaker, you know, he definitely has a history that's worth talking about. So yeah, this piece, for me, it has like a little bit of goofiness to it, but it's not silly at the same time. And, you know, so I don't know, I was trying to balance between having a little bit of like goofiness and, you know, not being too ominous at the same time. And we used it for this week's episode. And it was kind of an interesting moment because we used it when Sarah went to follow up on that one lead. And
the one that didn't pan out.
The one that didn't pan out. And by using that piece, we sort of suggested that this wasn't going to lead to anything because it just doesn't have the tone of like, this is going to be like it.
I feel like the music that is a kind of emotional cue is usually at Sarah's expense. And I don't mean that it's necessarily judgmental of her, but I mean, I definitely feel like it's clued into her state of mind or her response to something particularly usually that Anand has done or said to her.
you know, Sarah, to me, is sort of the emotional center of the story. Like her, she keeps going back and forth. The more she learns, the more unsure she becomes. So that's what I really try and focus on, is sort of things that no matter what your take is, you can sort of know how people are going to feel about it. And there have been, you know, like, hey, like there was a section a couple weeks ago, and, you know, I think we're all pretty, you know, it's a very tragic, sad thing. And so like music that underscores that is obviously acceptable. And there have been moments where Anand, whether he did it or not, is still a human being. And there have been moments when he talks about his parents, or I think it's okay to have a little bit of connection to his emotion with the music, because even if he did or didn't, it's still what he's talking about.
Well, Mark, I want to thank you for coming in, and obviously we're all big fans.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And you know, you've all done a wonderful job, and we appreciate that you're staying up late every week and making it happen.
It's super fun. Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, so last week we asked you, the listeners, to write to us at podcast@slate.com and tell us things that you would recommend that people listen to or watch or read when Serial's over, which, you know, as we now know, that'll come next week. And we got so many interesting suggestions, everything from 12 Angry Men to The Thin Blue Line, the Errol Morris documentary, to something I'd never heard of called The First 48, which is an A&E TV show in which, according to a listener named Josh, follows homicide detectives on the beat solving, or sometimes not, cases. He says, not bad for reality TV. Also, the podcast Criminal, another podcast called Stuff You Should Know, which has covered everything from how police interrogation works to how the Innocence Project works, what makes a serial killer.
That's a good, I like.
You like that one,
yes.
Wesley? I mean, one that came from a lot of people was Murder on a Sunday Morning. This is a documentary. It's actually by the same director who made The Staircase, which we've mentioned, because the producers of Serial have themselves brought that up as an example of something somewhat similar to what they do. Here's what a listener named Joe said about Murder on a Sunday Morning. Anybody who is even slightly interested in Serial absolutely has to watch Jean-Xavier Lestrade's masterful documentary. I apologize if I butchered that name. Murder on a Sunday Morning is about the Brenton Butler murder trial, which won the Academy Award for Best Documentary. It's a fascinating film, but worth watching just for Pat McGinnis, who seems to be the polar opposite of Gutierrez, i.e., unbelievably competent, smooth, and as charismatic as any film star in the world. So that's Murder on a Sunday Morning.
It's really good.
It's good. You've seen that one?
It's incredible. And, you know, even though he is dissed Cynthia Gutierrez, you know, it is a stark contrast between in style.
Well, so Wesley, I asked you this morning at the last minute to come up with something yourself that you would suggest. So what do you have in mind?
Well, I thought about a lot of different things that aren't necessarily in the same vein. Like, I think A Cry in the Dark, if you've never seen that before, is a really wonderful... I'm more interested in these cases, not about, like, whether or not the person did or didn't do it, but the state of mind of the accused, right? And so Lindy Chamberlain, who, by the way, you know, there's a great postscript that you can look up at some point after you've, like, familiarized yourself with the case. She's the classic dingo ate my baby woman. That movie is a really fascinating profile, with Meryl Streep starring as Lindy Chamberlain, of a woman who... It's just the question of, like, how a person ought to comport herself when accused of a heinous crime, in this case, possibly being the murderer of her child. But the movie that most people, that I don't think very many people have ever seen, is a film called Cropsey, which is a documentary from 2010 about an urban legend. It's the best movie ever made about Staten Island, for one thing, I think. It's at least in the top three. And it's about a series of murders of mentally ill children unsolved murders by an alleged boogeyman. And so there was a myth of the cropsy who would come to terrorize children if they were bad. And then children would disappear. And the film is just, I mean, it's a horror film. I mean, it's sort of it's presented as a horror film. And it chills you. It really is scary. And ironically enough, features footage of Geraldo Rivera, like, doing his thing.
Right.
Like, at peak Geraldo-ness, too. Because this is a case that happened in the 1970s, I believe, or the 1980s. I should look that up. But it's really, it's great, if nobody's seen it. It's like Nightmare on Elm Street, Errol Morris, your kind of worst daydream.
It's that sounds well amazing. I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's underrated, very little seen, and extremely effective.
So what about you, Katie? Was there a suggestion on here that jumped out to you?
Yeah, so I actually had not read or consumed or watched a lot of these suggestions, and one that people kept bringing up was the Paradise Lost film trilogy. And so I just wanted to read what listener Isabel wrote into us. She said, these three documentaries chronicle the gruesome murder of three young boys in Memphis, Arkansas, and the subsequent trial and conviction of three teenage boys, the West Memphis Three, for the murders. Since the completion of the last documentary, the three men have been released from prison and exonerated, although not legally. I would especially recommend this to serial fans, because now it is quite clear that these men were innocent and totally railroaded, but at the time these documentaries were made, it was less clear. It's very interesting to go back and see which pieces of evidence seemed so incriminating at the time. In particular, this was a similar case of limited evidence, so a lot hinged on the behavior of the accused and how they were perceived by their community. The powerful effects of prejudice, anger, and a mob mentality clearly prevented people from viewing the evidence clearly and dispassionately. So, you know, I mean, there are places of overlap there with Serial, maybe not necessarily, but it does seem like a pretty interesting counterpoint.
Yeah, I I've heard about those. I have heard of them. I've heard a lot of praise for them, but I have never actually sat down and watched them. Wesley, have you seen
those? I've seen all three, and very complicated feelings about all of them, but I mean, as a movie watching saga, it is very gripping. The third one is very good. I mean, we don't have time to get into the nuances of like what some of the problems are with it with the project. I mean, I think for these purposes, it is really worth the investment if you have the time. I'd recommend them. Yeah.
Well, those certainly sound worth watching. Katie, what was something that you had read or watched that you wanted to recommend to people?
Well, this is kind of curious. So I was looking over the reader email, and I kept seeing Paradise Lost appear. And I wondered, why is everyone recommending that we read Paradise Lost? And then it occurred to me that it would actually be a really good supplemental text to this podcast, because it's about, you know, justifying the ways of God to man, and in a sense about, like, the divine criminal justice system and, like, the logistical and theological and conceptual problems of all that, which sort of took me down a rabbit hole. And I thought, okay, so Paradise Lost, like, that sort of makes sense if you're into Serial. It's a good poem. But what you should really read is Dante's Inferno, because that is going to take you, that is going to have this sort of wide-eyed narrator who is touring through horrors and hell and sort of going through and kind of reassigning humanity to these various figures in various torments. And, like, the way that humanity and compassion is doled out is kind of problematic. Like, some of the sinners, Dante is incredibly sympathetic. Other ones, he's like, yeah, screw you in the fiery pit. There's sort of the hovering question of whether this is going to be a redemption story, whether it all amounts to this sort of arc of divine justice. And so now I'm just thinking, I really want to go back and read The Inferno in the context of Serial. So that's my geeky recommendation.
That's not geeky at all.
That's amazing.
I support that.
Absolutely. So one thing I was going to recommend, which I don't think any listeners sent to us, is a book by Janet Malcolm called The Journalist and the Murderer.
Of course, yeah. Mm. That's...
And I was going to bring it up even before listening to episode 11, Rumors, but it was in my mind throughout this one in particular. It starts with this famous opening line, which I should have called up beforehand, but I will try to paraphrase it. Any journalist who's honest with himself knows that what he's doing is morally indefensible. That's the basic thrust of the first line. And it's about the Jeffrey McDonald case, Jeffrey McDonald was convicted of murdering his family, and a writer named Joe McGinnis got access to McDonald and to his defense team and wrote a book, Fatal Vision. And the whole time, according to McDonald, McDonald says he was basically led to believe that McGinnis was on his side, that he was sympathetic, that he thought he was innocent. And then the book comes out and just portrays him as a killer. And, you know, it's clear that McGinnis, you know, completely believes that he did it. And so he then sues McGinnis and there's a trial. And so what Malcolm is writing about is the trial and about these questions it raises about the relationship of a journalist to her subject. And rather than say simply, oh, well, McGinnis totally botched this particular case, he was not honest with McDonald or what have you, she says, no, this raises serious fundamental questions about any journalist's relationship to a subject and what that relationship is. And we heard that today when Adnan says, I can't show you compassion. And,
yeah.
You know, we don't relate to each other in a normal human way. So I highly recommend it.
You can read that in one day.
Yeah, short.
I mean, not even because it's short, but because you can't
so
stop
gripping.
Reading it. She's Janet Malcolm. She's the best.
Yeah, she's amazing. And we did. We got so many other suggestions. So I'm going to write up a post for Slate. It'll go up on the website with a bunch more. So I urge you to check that out. And for next week, I would love to hear from listeners about what they're expecting from season two of Serial. We know that there will be a second season. Sarah Koenig said on today's podcast, she said, thanks for donating all this money to raise enough so we can do another season. What kind of story would you like to hear? Are there specific stories you think they should look into? Should they do something totally different? Should they do something exactly the same? Email us at podcasts@slate.com. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, we only have one episode left. I want to thank, as always, my co-host, Katie Waldman. It's great to see you here in New York.
Yeah, this was fun. Thanks.
And thank you, Wesley Morris, so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
Our producer is Joel Meyer. The executive producer of All Slate Podcast is Andy Bowers. For Katie Waldman and Wesley Morris, I'm David Hagland. I'll talk to you next week.